bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello! Welcome to the big show. Yes, this is the week's roundup of the technology news brought to you by an all-knowing, all-seeing, seventh eye type panel. Headed up by, top left, Mr. Alex G. Fox.
With
a, with a dodgy mic.
Oh, God, dodgy everything.
Did you think I wasn't talking to, did you think I wasn't talking to you then?
Oh, I think my headphones are dodgy as well. I thought you were talking to the guy sitting behind me.
No, oh, dear, dear, dear. How's the week been, bud?
It's been all right. I've done very little and got paid for doing it.
Good lad.
I don't know. It doesn't happen often, does it?
No.
So, yeah, that's been very good.
Good, man. We'll take that every time. next to him, joining us from the lowlands of Scotland, apparently in the middle of nowhere, it's Paul Wheatley. How you doing,
Hello. Man? I'm not too bad, thank you. How are you?
I'm suffering a bit, I have to say. I've got three good whiskies inside me, so home measures, and it's helping, definitely. And also, your jolly compatriotism is helping as well. So.
Oh, good. That's good. Oh, well, I should say today, a little announcement. I became an uncle today. My little niece, Aaron Wheatley, was born this afternoon, just wanted to mention that.
You named him after Aaron off Twitter, of course.
Sorry, say that again?
He was named after Aaron off Twitter, of course.
And also to follow Wheatley tradition, it's actually a little girl called Aaron.
Oh, bloody hell. You Scotch folk, Jesus. Right up there.
Yeah, no, so it's good. Yeah, and of course getting them ready because I'll be getting married a week on Saturday as well. So lots of stuff like that as well. So.
Does that mean you're not available for the Mac show that week?
No, probably not. No. Now,
what have the hits been like to your chuckle corner?
I don't know, actually. Roddy didn't put any... Well, if he did put analytics on, he didn't tell me about it. But I was very glad that you mentioned that in the Mac show. Thank you very much for that.
The hits are going to be huge.
Yes, yeah.
Excellent. On a weird, for some reason, no idea why it's doing it, we've got Eric Lanigan on Sarah's channel.
And, twice.
Oh,
and
twice.
We haven't got Sarah on at all. So let's go to Eric Lanigan next. Hello, mate.
Hey, how's it going?
It's not great, mate, but we'll get it sorted. How's it going with you?
Oh, not bad. Not bad.
Sarah, you need to do your camera down a bit, mate. Oh, no, you're right. It's all right. I was up. There you go. It's fine. Don't touch it. Don't touch whatever you do. Right. But good week for you, sir.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
Good. Like to hear that. And last but by no means least, it's Sarah Gray calling in from Ireland, flying a British flag, and there's a lynch mob outside the door with pitchforks and torches looking for you, mate.
I would doubt that because they don't even know that flag's there.
Right.
Kept it well under wraps when I smuggled that into the country, I can tell you.
Oh, why on earth have you taken it?
Well, because I took it deliberately so that I could actually make sure that it's a bit of British, you could British just, tech.
Yeah, but what if they'd have asked you to...
Even in the Emerald Isle.
What if they'd have asked you to empty out your smalls at the airport or customs?
Well, they'd have found it then, wouldn't they?
Oh, blimey, there could have been a real running. The week in tech. There's not been a lot of news, which is strange, really, because normally I save that line for the Mac show. The one that has really engaged me this week, and I've got to say, I've read it twice because you listen to it. You see what you think, guys, all right? Ready for this? Harold Sonny White of NASA's Johnson Space Center on Friday said at the 100-year Starship Symposium that the warp drive might be a lot easier than we first thought. Apparently, the first concept for a real warp drive was suggested by a Mexican physicist called Miguel, and I can't say his surname. However, not because it's a swear word, I just can't say it.
Something Mexican?
However, however, subsequent calculations found that the device that he designed would require prohibitive amounts of energy, somewhere around the total mass energy of the planet Jupiter. So that's
entirely possible then. Yeah.
Exactly. It's entirely possible, but it needs the entire mass energy of Jupiter. So that's what you think warp drives come through. But apparently, They've redone calculations and changing the shape of the ring that encircles the spacecraft to more a rounded donut than a solid flat ring means that the warp drive could be powered with the mass energy of 500 kilograms. There's a bit of difference there, isn't there?
Just a bit.
So there you go. The shape of your ring makes all the difference. We got a show title. I've been preparing that all week. Thank God Wheatley left. Right. The week in tech.
Oh, very good.
Has anyone got any stories they fancy doing? Because I've got to say, it's been a pretty crap week. Normally, it saves us. Last minute.
Yeah.
We're not talking about rings and starships. Facebook. Facebook has trialled a mobile ad system on third-party sites, which basically focus the advertising a little bit better. As a result, the firm's stock has gone up 23%. But, Paul, you had a comment on this to start off with. What's the thoughts? I mean, Facebook, I've got to say, there's a certain amount of Facebook since they launched. I've really kind of dropped off my radar. I just haven't been picking them for stories on any of the shows or anything. But.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, they have a massive, massive blob of user data, user information, everything like that. As far as I'm concerned, if they're going to do this, it's a really good thing because you go through the internet and you see ads for everything. If you just go away and buy yourself or you happen to be looking at shoes, the next half a dozen websites you go into are showing you shoes that may or may not be similar or the kind of thing you're looking for. If Facebook is feeding this data in, it's only a good thing. I can't see a downside to this, assuming that we trust Facebook and they're going to anomalize it. And I know that's an entirely separate thing, but assuming they're going to do what they said they're going to do and they're going to anomalize it, I don't see how this is a bad thing. It's Facebook actually going to come good on some of the promises in their IPO. It's going to give us more relevant ads. If you don't want to see ads, you block cookies, but that's the same no matter what type of ad network you're using. I can't see it as a bad thing.
Yeah, I think you're right, Paul. I mean, you know, if you accept the fact that you're going to get ads, whatever happens, it's surely going to be better from the ad company's point of view and from your point of view. If you're actually something that might be going to be interested, I mean, I can't remember what it was. It was earlier this week. I was looking at a site and I was looking at the preferences because I wanted to change something in it, and they made it abundantly clear that you would get ads, whatever happened. But they said you can either decide you want to have random adverts, or you could have targeted adverts. Which would you rather have? And I thought about it, and I thought, yeah, actually, thinking about it, if I haven't got a choice, I'll take targeted any time.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely. I've just gone to my Facebook page here, just as a kind of instant acid test, and the only advert, there's one advert, a small little tiny advert on the right-hand side. They're not exactly monetizing their own page particularly well. But on the right-hand side, there's a sponsored link that says, would you like an underwater smartphone?
Mm-hmm. What have you been?
I'm just trying to go back through the memories that I've got of the last few weeks about what I've done that's A, underwater, and B, to do with telephony.
Scuba diving.
I thought you were about to say B, to do with being smart.
Oh, thanks, mate. That too. Three, then. There you go. Well done, Alex Fox. Cut to the quick, you bastard.
Well, you're real. I've got to kick you now.
But they do work. I mean, all I ever get on the side of, I rarely go onto the Facebook website, but up until kind of the last 9 months, all I ever got was adverts for rugby and golf. And that was it. And that was because two things. At some point when I set up my profile, I said that I was interested in was rugby and golf. And that's all I ever got. Now,
on that basis, if I go to my profile now, I've got technology and diving. And I really don't remember typing that. I don't know if I set it up drunk, but I don't recall.
Maybe they've got speech recognition now. And if you're logged into Facebook when you actually are doing things and you're talking on the net, maybe they can pick up the word Facebook and diving, or, you know, in the same sentence and think, you must be interested in diving.
Well, yeah, but everyone's used
Facebook. Let's really move on from that.
No, the Facebook share price is diving. Everyone's been saying that.
Well done.
Don't you want underwater Siri? Don't you want underwater turn-by-turn navigation?
Aren't you glad that Alex fixed his microphone before we started?
Well, I'm going to be able to say.
I think this is only a good thing. I can't see this being a downside, and it actually might. And if I was somebody who was into this kind of thing, I actually think if this might be a little bit of light at the end of the IPO tunnel for Facebook. If they can actually turn this around and start actually doing something with it, because at the moment, smart advertising isn't that fantastic out there. It basically just goes in something that you've looked at very, very recently. And chances are you've probably bought that, in which case you're not really interested in seeing any more ads about it. This way, you're actually going to get stuff from your friend groups, from other people that are buying stuff that are very similar to you, and they're probably going to aggregate data together. The people who are in the same kind of demographic as you, use the same computer hardware as you, in the same location in the country as you, and things like that. I think it's awesome. As Sarah said, if you have to see ads, then I want to see ads that are relevant.
If you broaden the conversation on this, though, I mean, surely this is a year ago, I was saying, right, you go and you buy a set of Nike trainers, and then you go and get the Nike application for your iPhone, you go out running, you post the results to your Twitter feed, and by default, that gets mirrored onto your Facebook feed because of the API. There's no reason that Facebook can't say, here's the date of purchase of your Nike trainers, because you bought them through an ad off our site, you log that, and then what's the average lifespan of a set of trainers for someone who's a serious runner? 3 months, 4 months. Your Nike application tells you how many miles you've run it. The miles that you've run it dictates the time that they start to wear out. So at that correct time, you should start getting more ads for more Nike trainers. Mm-hmm. And this is where I don't get Twitter, because Twitter's restricted the API now. So you can't start sending your API data and all of your posts out to every other application. It's not linking with third-party applications in the same way. But there's the real money, because of the fact you've got this person who exists in the, I exist in the cloud. All of my friends, I haven't got any real friends, they're all on Twitter. I sit and talk to you guys every week. I sit and post stuff every week that reveals enormous amounts about my personality. And Twitter's not logging my keywords. It's not logging where I go, what I see, the links that I post. It has nothing to do with, you know, if I put remote control adverts. We talked about remote control last week. Now, the fact I'm trying to get a camera platform together to for commercial purposes. I've tweeted out a load of stuff that's to do with remote control stuff recently, and I've visited a lot of sites to do with remote control stuff. That should all be being logged somewhere, and no one's doing it. And Facebook's not doing it either. And it's crazy to me.
How do we know that Twitter aren't doing it for later use?
Because I would be getting tons of shite through my stream right now.
Yeah. I'm not talking about now, Ewan. I'm talking about they might be building something that's going to utilise that data they haven't yet launched.
Yeah, but this is the web. This is the web,
why
mate.
Why else would they
restrict
the API?
But that's exactly the point that Paul's making. What I did yesterday was bought something. What they've got to do is clock what I want to buy, and they've got to give it me now. They can't wait until I've already bought it. They can't wait until the moment's gone. They've got to strike while the iron's hot.
I mean, who owns Twitter? A small bunch of people. It's not, you know, it's not a Facebook being floated or anything.
It's probably Amazon or Apple.
Yeah, but to make it more valuable, you've got to prove the concept, which is what Facebook didn't do. Facebook sort of floated on the market, and now they're struggling, and now they're running all over the place trying to make money. Now, what Twitter are doing is, if you like, to me, the more sensible way of doing it, you prove the point by being able to say, okay, well, we haven't flushed everything down the loo already. We haven't, you know, used up all our advertising opportunities. We haven't used up all their API opportunities. We're going to lock it down until we float it. And when we float it, that is worth infinitely more, because it's, if you like, it's virgin soil. You've got all that information and the ability to have not annoyed half the people that use it. And then when you do decide to use that, sell it on for advertising and all the rest of it, you've got all these people that are more or less locked into it. Facebook did it the other way around. They tried to exploit it and then prove a point and then float it. This, I think, is a more intelligent way of doing it. You know, lock everyone in. Don't abuse the situation. Get the information you need, or rather, proof that you've got the ability to have that information to advertisers, and then sell it on. Don't try and sell it before you've got the information.
Chat room saying they want the Lanigan twins back.
I want two Sarahs.
Sarah says, DT says, yes, yay, Sarah's back. So you got one vote. There you go, Sarah, that's fine.
I know. That's nice to know. I've got at least one fan.
Alex has just come back with the point that I said, and so's DT actually. He said, maybe they've decided that people that buy airborne cameras today will buy an underwater smartphone tomorrow, which is fair enough. But Alex has says, that'd be a complicated algorithm, surely. I think there's 2 points to make there. Number one, you just floated on the stock market. Allegedly, you're worth $100 billion. You can afford a complicated algorithm if you really want it. And B, it was so long ago, I've forgotten what B was. No.
Think about the smart reference. I'm not sure what it was. Oh, no, that was C, wasn't it?
Well, I got a question for thought here. Facebook right now is worth half of what it was when it went public. What do you think it would take to win back that value?
Them to work out how to monetize the value in the data they've got.
I think it's a stage one of that. I think this is, maybe not, I'm not going to go so far as to say this is stage one in a multi-step process that they've already got planned out, but maybe this is them dipping their toe in the water, which I think makes total sense. They're just going to take a bit of a punt here and see what sticks, which sure isn't good business sense, but they haven't really shown much other business sense, so. It might be a gore.
What would make Facebook work, though, would be, Amazon are out there, they're the biggest player in the market. But if you could have, if you like, Amazon having a social network, which then had advertising along the social network, Amazon would be the world beater in social networks, productivity, selling, market, everything. So what would save Facebook is a link up with, I think Amazon are too big for Facebook.
Interesting you should say that, and I'm assuming being that I was told this and wasn't told to say under NDA, but I actually know that Amazon and Facebook did a trial whereby they actually linked your Facebook account and your Amazon account together, and it was in the States. Actually, Eric, did you see this? I didn't come over to the UK, I don't know if it was public. And they linked the two pieces of information together, and it basically pulled in your friend circles, and then it gave you recommendations, not just based on what you'd been looking at and what you'd bought, but also on what your friends had been looking at and what they'd bought. It also pulled Amazon data into your friend's feed, in your Facebook feed. And so when it came up and said, it's Billy Bob's birthday on Tuesday, here are some things in his Amazon feed that he wants, one click buy. And went very, very well. And I could see them doing more of that. That was about a year ago.
Oh, no. Wait. I got it. Wait. So now when it says so-and-so's birthday is today, it also says here is his Amazon wish list. What do you want to buy him off the list?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's fantastic from my point of view, because I am a lazy, lazy man.
this is the point. I mean, if the second point I was going to make, I remembered. Thank you, Alex. The point was, how sophisticated do you think algorithms are on web surfing already? Because if you get a cookie placed on your computer and it's starting to analyze, that there are programs which look where you look before you click, not just where you hover before you click, what you go towards before you then go and click. This is way beyond, and Facebook could be doing stuff so far in advance that it's untrue. They could be monitoring when you need a new pair of trainers. They could be monitoring what the lifespan of your cooker's supposed to be if they found out how and what time you bought a cooker. I tweet out, I've just bought a new cooker this week. It's getting delivered on Tuesday. Bang, someone logs that. Right, what's the average lifespan of a cooker? 15 years. Well, okay, that's not going to get you an instant return, but it will in 15 years if you hold that data, and that data is infinitesimal in terms of bite size, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a good point.
And things that are consumable, I mean, we're talking proper consumables. Even food. I went and bought a tin of, what's the average shelf life of a tin of? 2 years. Right, let's put a log in, let's get it. Have you tried since? Do you know that one's gone out of date?
Yeah. Two sides to that. That's an old sales thing. I briefly sold cars for about 6 months, about 9 years ago, for my sins.
How many people regret that now?
There's a lot of them. Hopefully none of them are watching this. But all the other guys that were in there was like four other older guys that had been doing it for years and years and years. And they very rarely got new sales in. They just sat there phoning up guys and ladies that they'd sold cars to 3 years ago and going, you're in the market for a new car. And they just got that churn, and they had that churn, and they'd had that churn going for years. And every now and again, they'd scoop up a brand new sale, and that's fine. I'm doing it as well. I had a second point and it's completely gone, so I'll let somebody else talk.
That's all right. That's good.
I was going to make a point about what you said, Ewan, when you were talking about buying tins of stuff.
Yeah.
And that actually links in quite nicely to the concept of the supermarket loyalty card, because I think that the way that works, it's quite intelligent. They see what you buy on a regular basis, and they target you in terms of things that you may also like, if you like that, or similar things.
But they're same. Crap.
Yeah, well, I know, but it's what it's all about. And
no, I exactly agree with you, Sarah.
It's that data that is the value in why they give you discounts and stuff like that.
Absolutely. I agree. I couldn't agree more with you, Sarah. I think that data is incredibly valuable, but they don't use it smartly. They sell you things that you've already purchased, as Paul said, or they start some lateral thinking process that gives you underwater cell phones.
There's a supermarket retailer in the UK, and they are currently researching the idea of at the end of your online shop, you may get suggestions of things that they think you'd run out of by looking at your past baskets. So, for example, tea bags. If you buy tea bags on average every 8 weeks, and this is your 8th or 9th week shop, and you haven't put tea bags in your shopping basket, they're going to suggest that you maybe pop that in at the end. That would be awesome.
Well, Sainsbury's already does that, and Tesco. Because my wife shops with Sainsbury's and Tesco online. We always get the stuff delivered. We never go to the supermarket unless it's for, you know, odd accoutrements and that kind of stuff. And it's always, she gets a basket that's pre-laid out with all the things that she orders every time that she never has to do. And I stopped drinking tea for a while and started drinking coffee because I just didn't like the taste. Twinings changed their blend. So I said, stuff it. I'm not drinking that tea anymore. And instantly, it went from a bi-weekly order to a monthly order. They clocked that she'd ordered less tea and changed it in the basket.
Well, I'd like them to know when all the stuff in my cupboard's going off, and then they could just let me know that the sell-by date's gone.
Your fridge is going to do that, mate. Your fridge can already do that. Your fridge can already do it.
Yeah, the manufacturers know that as well. So why shouldn't they feed that data into the supermarkets, and then they can use it?
You know what I wish has always been a product, and I can't believe that still to this day and age, we have not seen this. I've always wanted a barcode scanning household inventory product. It could be as simple as like Delicious Library was for the Mac. Remember when that came out? And it was the way to take household inventory of things like DVDs, books, movies, things that could be cross-referenced on Amazon and put in a little library. Why don't you have that for everything? Why don't you have that for boxes of cereal and for milk and for Kleenex boxes? You know, anything that you kind of have to keep a household inventory of. Imagine if it was so simple that you just take out your smartphone or hold it up to your laptop's camera and it just scans the barcode. All these things have UPC codes. They have for 20 years or more now. How come no one has linked it to a universal database that then can help you, not necessarily to sell you things or to data mine your buying habits, but to just help you even as a piece of shareware, like Delicious Library was, that just says, hey, I'm out of this now. Remind me to order more. You know, that would be useful.
Good for your insurance company as well, wouldn't it? Every time you bring another box into the house, it gets registered by your insurance company. And if you get it stolen, you can prove you owned it.
And it tweets out automatically, Alex Fox has bought 3 Nikon D600s.
I mean, the more we talk about it, the more it knows exactly what's in your house.
I mean, the more we talk about it, the more it sounds like RFID. But I think there is a big difference here. Or I guess the thing I want to point out is, I'm not sure that's a good place for Facebook to be on from a consumer opinion. It's a good place. It's a great place for them to be from a business side. But Facebook basically now wants to be the what do they call it? Like the concierge, like the
hotel.
Not a hotel, but you see it at like some stores now. I know Apple has a thing, but there's like this one-on-one shopping experience you could buy. You see it advertised at stores, at malls, and things. Of like a personal shopper that accompanies you, and I guess I don't know what they do, but it's a high end thing that a lot of rich people do. Facebook would like to be that for everything, but they want to get a cut of they want to be the broker, they want to be the middleman that says, hey Amazon, let's link up our Facebook identity service and our universal login with everything that this person buys, and you can become their de facto store, and we become their de facto social network, and we'll hand you everything they buy, and their buying habits, and their gaming habits, and their application habits, and their contact, the people they know, and you can then cross-reference them for things they might need, and their wish list, and just goes on and on and on. I mean, I think it's what they're trying to do, which is to have a universal login that then helps you organize your life in a unified identity way, of a real name identity that's tied to real accounts, real credit cards, real buying habits. I think that's useful, But I don't think that should be solely the purview of Facebook. I think that's more of, I think that's, you know, I've been saying this for years, but that's one of those identities that I think we need to own. It has to be some kind of universal login, like a passport ID, but it's tied to us that we have control over, that is not just a for-profit thing that Facebook can exploit.
This chat, I've got to read the chat room out before I go on to the point that I'm probably going to forget at the end of it. Alex Rodriguez says, I'm sure there's an app already that does that. DT says, I was wondering, they're all taking the piss out of the word accoutrements. I was wandering down the odd accoutrements aisle of local Aldi the other day and I saw an underwater smartphone for sale. Thanks, mate. A booker, he says, Lanigan wants his Roomba to run round with a barcode scanner on it. No doubt. And Tone says, tweeting out to invite theft, which drives up my insurance premium if I claim it's a conspiracy. And Booker, he says, presenting the iButler or iAlfred, according to Tone. Very good.
Oh, careful.
Yeah. And I forgot the point I was going to say. See, I knew that would happen. But this is the de facto point is that this is where the money is for Facebook, for Twitter, for Amazon. That it's about the sale. It's about promoting the sale. It's about tweaking the interest to come back to the sale with the right piece of information. And Twitter particularly, I think, has been immensely stupid in its process of closing down its API. It wants this own little application that you can do sponsored tweets, and that's it. And what it should be doing is it should be looking at key words within the tweets and not looking at hashtags. It should be saying, right, how many people are mentioning the word TV? And in what context are they? But is the word buy and the word TV in the same sentence? And then you have sponsored tweets that come in, and the sponsored tweets hit the keywords that you've used. And that is the point of what Facebook's $100 million realization will be coming. It'll be 10 times that value if it actually captures it. But it could do this 12 months ago, and it still isn't doing it. It could still be putting in where adverts are going to come, what you're going to buy, where you go next. The link with Amazon, I think, is amazing. I mean, that was masterstroke, but you say it's only been trialed in the States, and now it's gone the way. But it's a stupid thing, because it could have been enormous, and that's where their share price will recover, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, well, hopefully they'll do something with it eventually. As I say, it was about a year ago, so there's every chance that they're just trying it. I mean, they are a fairly big organization now, and some of these big organizations are like trying to turn the Titanic, so there's every chance that these things are in flight, and they're just taking a little time to bring them to market. But I still have hope for their share price. I think they've still got some energy in those legs yet.
Jolly good.
Yeah, I haven't given up on them, but I do still think that I still feel that they're overpriced for what they are.
How awesome would it be if Mark Zuckerberg just cashed out and disappeared? Like after all this fame and glory, the movies made about him, just, you know, huge IPO, just sells it all, cashes out, he buys an island, we never hear from him again. He's like, so long, suckers.
I'd give him $5 towards it.
Yeah, I'd pay for that.
He's already made a commitment that he's not going to do that.
Just to finish the story off, I clicked on the underwater smartphone link. And it took me to a place that gives me housings for my iPhone, but I'm not allowed to access the website unless I sign in, sign up, or log in with Facebook. I'll be clicking on the little black X on the top right corner. You stupid people.
Dade.
Sale lost. There we go. You had your chance. BBC has dropped Flash. It's gone for its own media player. Flash is no more. It's also dropped James Hart, which is why he's not here this evening, because he's out getting pissed after 16 years of working at the BBC. It's his leaving due this evening, so well done, James. Huzzah. Out from under the vaulting horse, mate. Well done. Right, iPlayer has dropped Flash. Significant is Flash, is the nail in the coffin? Is Flash done and dusted? Is there any applications left?
Surely Flash was done and dusted many years ago. I think this is, I'm not sure this is the last nail in the coffin, more like, I was really shocked when I read this, because I assumed that iPlayer had dropped Flash years ago.
I had two versions, didn't they?
Right.
They had a Flash and obviously a non-Flash version, but they obviously just turned off the Flash one.
Flash is dead. Adobe is admitting that Flash is dead, says the chat room.
Well, they've stopped updating mobile Flash. It wasn't that long ago. It was like 3 or 4 months ago or something like that. Who uses it?
So they're also looking at temporarily, they withdrew it from certain browsers until it was actually, I understand there was a bit of a furor and it was reinstated, albeit on a temporary basis, knowing that it will go away.
But there was the Android thing with they were taking Flash out of the store and it lasted one day until they put it back in again.
Yeah, that's what I was saying,
yeah. It was one day. It wasn't exactly it didn't take them long to
think. I don't think we're quite ready for it yet. But the BBC replacing Flash in their player will make a significant step for a lot of people, particularly in the UK.
Alex Rodriguez is keeping it highbrow by saying, consequently, of course, don't forget Flash is the fastest man in the world. Barry Allen, there we go.
And he's the saviour of the universe.
Apparently. So,
I think we still have a problem that is unsolved, and that is encrypted streaming video or video with embedded ads or video that does anything more than just purely plays a start-stop video stream.
Why is that a problem? Because that means it doesn't exist anymore, does it? I don't have to put up with that crap.
Well, it does exist. You see, that's what Hulu uses. I haven't used iPlayer, but I'm sure BBC is using some kind of encrypted technology. It's what YouTube and Google use when they want to stream things. And live streaming. There really is no HTML5 live streaming. So I have a little impromptu rant here that just popped into my head about Google. I think that because Google, I think Google dropped the ball here. I think Google, with their YouTube presence being the number one video place on the internet, would have picked up the ball, run with it, and come up with a replacement for Flash had they not doubled down on Flash in an effort to gang up against Apple a few years ago. Mm. I think we saw Google shift from saying everything is open standards, royalty-free HTML5. It's our ethos. It's what we live by. It's what the web lives or dies by. This is the best thing for the web. All of a sudden, when Steve Jobs said we're never going to support Flash, Google was all about Flash. Suddenly, Flash was embedded in it, included on the Android phones. It was embedded in Chrome. Can't even get Chrome without Flash. And they made these public pronouncements that we're going to support Flash. We love Flash. It really seemed antithetical to their open standards, web-based standards, cross-compatibility. Everyone expected they should have been beefing up HTML5. Instead, they went the other direction. I think if you flash back to like 2008 or whenever that was that shift happened, I think if they had started developing right then and there a program that had the new features that they could have designed it around WebM. They could have made, Google could totally have made their own standard here with the power and the ubiquity of YouTube. They have player features on YouTube that you cannot get in HTML5. You can speed up videos now. They've got 2x, 3x speed and half speed. They've got closed captioning. You've got overlays. A lot of YouTube content people who make their money off of YouTube rely on those overlays where you click where it says like see more videos or click here to rewind or click here for the link. All the interactivity doesn't exist on their HTML5 version or on any HTML5 video. And of course, you have the encrypting, lack of encryption and lack of streaming capability. And I think we as an internet lost ground because Google chose to support Flash, which now got out of the game on their own.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Mm.
Yeah, it's one of the things I actually felt that Apple actually made the right decision on as opposed to Google. And I was very disappointed. I really thought it was going to be, here we go, it's going to be HTML5 now from now on, and it's really going to establish it. I was really pleased that Steve Jobs said that.
The chat room's gone off on Silverlight, by the way, at this point.
Well, yeah, I know.
I can't read some of the names out because they rhyme with light.
That's dead as well. So long term. So we all know HTML5 is the way to go. But I really thought that Apple's decision was going to make it happen.
Just one cotton picking minute here, Sarah. Just a second.
Yes.
Because I think the Olympics was the watershed for me, most definitely. Because I sat throughout the whole of the Olympics cooking, cleaning and doing stuff in the kitchen, ironing because the wife was away and I had to get it ironed before she got back. And I got my iPad set up and I got it plugged in. So I got endless power. Thank you very much while I'm cooking my dinner. And I go to the BBC website via Safari. And because it doesn't support Flash, I've got to get the HTML5 stuff and BBC pushes out the HTML5 stuff. or doesn't, because actually I got no end of corruptions, glitches, scrollings across the bars. There was all sorts of crap going on the screen. I never got it to function properly. And that was the day I downloaded Chrome for the iPad for the first time ever, and I watched it in the native browser, and I'm pretty sure in saying that it utilized Flash because it was within the browser, and it was smooth as silk. It was crystal clear. It was everything I wanted. And everyone goes, but hang on, it hogs your cycles. Well, what the hell else am I using it for? I want to watch the Olympics while I iron.
I know. I agree. Ewan, I agree. But the point, all I'm saying is I thought that Apple's decision to actually go with HTML5, although I thought the reasons why they actually did it commercially were dubious, because I didn't believe them for a second, but the actual decision was great. And I thought it was actually going to take off. The fact that you are still getting issues when you actually go to use it with other browsers and other ways of looking at stuff actually only proves
but it's not a good decision
not yet.
It's I know you hate Apple, and I'm not an Apple I'm a realist on
Apple here.
No, I know. but Apple's wrong. Apple was absolutely wrong to not include Flash.
I don't believe we're having this conversation.
Yes.
I'm saying Apple's right, you're saying Apple's wrong.
Apple's utterly wrong. The user experience suffered thanks to Steve Jobs wanting to shove it up Adobe's butt, and that's all there was to it. Flash is a hog. Fair enough, but most people that are using Flash want to use it for Flash for the purposes of looking at something that one time and doesn't want it for anything else. And I'm getting called a Flash lover in the chat room, which if the slipper fits, Cinders, fair enough, I'll wear it. But the point was, when I was sitting ironing and I was desperate to watch what's her name in the Kieran, I have no idea what that event's about in cycling, but why the hell you follow a pizza delivery boy, I've got no idea. But when that was going on, I didn't give a toss about HTML5 or Flash. I just wanted to watch the content. Flash delivered, HTML5 blew it out its own arse.
Absolutely
right. Hold on, but the Chrome browser doesn't have a Flash plugin in the iPad. So you were watching HTML5 in there.
Oh, well, that's the argument gone then.
No, I don't think the argument is gone at all, actually. I think the argument is simply that I'm a plebiscite. I don't sit here. I don't write code. I don't even know how to turn the lights on, right? But I want, as Ewan does, I want to be able to turn on my machine and I want to watch, I don't know, YouTube or BBC or whoever. And quite frankly, I don't give a damn. There you go. What is producing that for me, whether it be Flash, HTML5, or Zargon the Greek. I really don't care. But the point is, I'm being this person is the same as 99.9% of people that makes use of this. Yep. And if HTML5 is not doing as well, if not better, than what I've already got, it's a bit obnoxious of people, not you people, but people like the Steve Jobs at the time, to tell me that this thing's got to go. Okay, it can go when you, as in the person telling me it's got to go, has produced something equally as simple, equally as free, and equally as accessible, and better, if not, than what I've already got.
And not just in a lab. And not just in a lab.
Till that point, it's got to be there for me to use.
Use the word accessible in that, though, because Flash will be the later versions are slightly more accessible, but Flash in itself is not that accessible.
Are we talking about accessibility?
Yeah, and accessibility, as in web accessibility.
Yeah.
You also look at SEO issues. HTML5 for everything. I agree with you in principle that as far as the user is concerned, they want to just fire something up and it just needs to work. They don't care that it's HTML5 or whatever it is. But the point is that Flash is a proprietary technology that's owned by a particular company. It also does take up, and I completely see your point there, Ewan, that if all you want to do is watch something, it doesn't really matter whether it's taking up cycles. But if you're wanting to browse a website and something, there's an advert on the right-hand side and you've got to punch a monkey or something like that, that is taking up cycles when you're wanting to do other things, then that's an issue. And you know, there's a list of accessibility, of usability. Websites that are built entirely in Flash are horrendous to use. There's all sorts of arguments for it. So I and here's a big surprise. I'm going to side with Steve Jobs in this one, but I think it should have gone. It has gone, or it's going, I should say. I think it's a massively good thing. The only downside is that when it eventually does go, it's going to bring every website for a restaurant or takeaway store in the country to its knees, because all of those are built in Flash.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think we should unify our points here, because I think going back to what I was saying, I think we all agree that replacing Flash interfaces and Flash web pages with HTML5 is better for usability, better for search, better for copy pasting, better for readability on an iPad or a tablet device, all that stuff. Interface resolution scaling, all that stuff I think is better in HTML5. But the video component, that is still what's up in the air. I wanted to ask Sarah, though, because the chat room brought it up a couple of times, and I don't really know the answer to this. Mark Zuckerberg recently kind of trashed HTML5 and said that they had to rewrite their iOS app from scratch using, and he blamed it on HTML5. And I don't know what to make of that. I'm wondering if any of you guys know. I think clearly he's talking about a native app, and I'm sure that native code will run faster than HTML5. But did you think it was an unfair attack on HTML5? Or was he talking about a level of native code on hardware that is not relevant to the web as viewed in a web browser?
It won't be relevant if it's a native app. It's unlikely to be HTML5, isn't it? We've had this conversation before, Eric, about the fact that, you know, we believe that we both share the same view that the web, making stuff available for HTML5, makes it easier to roll stuff across as many platforms as possible, because it's not dependent upon the operating system, because it's specific to a browser. That's the whole point of having HTML5. So if it's an app, it's not going to be, I doubt it's going to be HTML5.
So why do you suppose they did it then? Because I would assume that Facebook, I mean, they're one of the richest companies out there right now, and one that has to make the most money. You'd think that they would spend whatever they had to and throw their ingenious developers behind whatever native apps they had to. You'd think that a native app running on iOS as fast as it could be would be their top priority, really, and displaying ads, all that stuff. So what would have possessed them to say, we're going to write it once and deploy anywhere, even if it's extra slow?
Writing it once and deploying it anywhere is always going to be economical for a company. I mean, I see your point that they've got tons of money and things like that, but you don't really want to have half a dozen separate teams, one writing an iOS app, one writing an Android app, one writing a Symbian app, one writing a BlackBerry app, and so on and so forth. It makes far more sense for an HTML5 app and either wrap it up and make it a native app of sorts in an HTML5 wrapper, or create as an HTML5 app. They have now released a pure iOS version, which I have found to be significantly better on the couple of occasions I've used it. I mean, I guess they would maybe just not want to get the farm on it. They didn't want to kind of go down different routes and spend the time developing different applications and different code bases. That would be my guess, but having not been on the inside, I don't know.
I mean, there's a point in the chat room here. Doesn't a certain entertainment industry determine the dominant need for formats based on what they choose, which is the porn industry?
Which is why HTML5 is best, because it's open standards.
Well, what's the porn industry of choice?
I think that if you go back to Facebook's dealing with Steve Jobs in his later days and what they were trying to do. Remember the negotiations breaking down about bringing Facebook into Ping? There was a lot of speculation about Facebook doing their own smartphone. I mean, we've been saying that for, I think, 2 years now. We've never seen that. So I wonder if Facebook, and at the same time, what's the thing you see in every article about Facebook, every report about why their stock price is down, and what they say in response to that? They say, oh, well, we have trouble. We have a big problem. And that's that people are viewing our site on mobile devices using native apps, which don't display ads as well. So just maybe, do you suppose that they were hobbling their native app intentionally to take people back to the web page where ads were displayed freely? Maybe so.
There's a good point from DT in the chat room saying Apple deliberately killed Flash on the iPhone because it would have prevented the whole App Store ecosystem, which is a great point. I think that's exactly it. And that's Jobs all over. Jobs did things for his own ends. He never did anything for the better, the embodiment of the user experience at all.
That's why I said that when I was talking about agreeing with Apple, that I'd questioned their real motives behind it, but the actual decision they made, I did agree with.
Yeah, I definitely agree for video. I mean, that's why Apple, they've been very unfair to their customers with this. I mean, never having Blu-ray support, ridiculous. Not having support for all sorts of video formats that are common on the internet is not fair. And even just the lack of a Flash player, why do you suppose Apple didn't like the Flash player for purchasing and renting encrypted content? Because they want you on the iTunes store and they want it using their own software in their own store, which they get a 30% or more cut of. That's why.
great point. Yeah,
exactly. And all companies that do that. Every company is out there and make money. And, you know, Google have got the Play Store. Amazon have got their store. Every company wants you to use their store. I want you to use my business, same as everybody else in this panel. Everybody's working to make cash. And so it makes business sense for it to do that. I don't buy the idea that they killed Flash purely for the App Store. I think it was a handy bonus. But you're always going to be able to make all the same stuff on HTML5 or more, and make a much better job of it and less buggy if you use Cocoa or Objective-C or something like that. That's going to actually make a native app that's not going to have bugs in it. I don't buy that. I can see it's a nice side idea, but yeah.
Darren Griffin in the chat room says, how come Android had an App Store ecosystem that did have Flash then? Wouldn't you see any of the current apps that stretch the system running on Flash? On iPad, just to go back to a point you made earlier on about Flash not working, if I go to Vimeo on Safari on my iPad, Paul, it tells me I can't play the content because it's a Flash-based content. If I go it on Chrome, it plays it. I don't know why that is.
That's not right, because Vimeo was HTML5 before YouTube was. They've had that for a long time.
Yeah, I think it encodes it on the fly as well. I think some sites do. Certainly YouTube did in the early days too. I don't know why it's doing that, but certainly there's no Flash on the iPad, not even on the Chrome browser. And I use the Chrome browser as my main browser on the iPad.
Vimeo won't play on Safari. Thank you, Alex, for some videos. There we go. See? That wasn't me just making it up. Chrome has Flash built in, though, doesn't it? Says Tone in the chat room. Apparently not on the iPad.
No, it's only on OS.
Yeah. It's an interesting one. Interesting one. Is there any other stories you want to talk about?
Talk about the PlayStation 3.
PlayStation 3, said the man from The Gamer Show. Mm. If you haven't listened to The Gamer Show yet, you really should.
Good link.
Well done. Thank you. Apparently you're renowned for your segues, Paul, according to Chiz.
they dislike my segues quite heavily, so I've stopped doing them now, actually, because they were moaning so much about it. So. But yeah, so
talking about segues.
Oh, God.
Sony PlayStation 3 2012, up close and personal, eyes on. Apparently it's slim, it's white, it's gorgeous, it's super dandy, fuzzy, wonderful stuff. Paul, to start us off, mate, is it worth the shekels?
Now, six-year-old technology, this is the same age as, this is like you going into a store and buying the original iPhone and still expecting to pay three quarters of the price that you originally would buy the original iPhone for. I think it's a bit of a joke. All they've really done is they've given you two more options. So you've got a 250 gigabyte hard drive and a 500 gigabyte hard drive, or you've got the option to have them in white, which I'm fairly positive you never had the option to do it before. That's about it. It's just flogging a dead horse.
Paul, what do you know about the next generation consoles? Are we going to see a new PlayStation 4 or an Xbox 1080 or something for next holiday season?
Oh, I don't think so. 720, but I think it's going to be 2014. See, I have a theory around this. I think that this has got a lot to do with the they're not convinced that they're going to sell in quite the same way that they did with like the 360 or the PlayStation 3 or something like that. And they're maybe thinking, well, you know, we sold hundreds of thousands of these units, the original PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, and we're maybe not going to manage that with the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox 720. So let's just keep on squeezing as much as we can get out of this, either so that we can get out of this little down slump in the economy, or so that we can actually make next generation hardware that's going to be significantly better to actually justify the cost or to justify the price point. That's a couple of ideas, but I can't get why they keep doing this, unless it's something to do with that. They're just trying to push back the requirement to bring out a new piece of hardware.
It's part of the chat room's already going off on, and I got to say, I thought it when I saw the white one. It's an XR3i. Chat room, you've got to be of a certain age to understand what that's about. White stilettos, rah-rah skirts, and XR3Is, mate. That's my childhood. And Alex Rodriguez says, are they worried that Sega will get back in? That's why they're updating it.
I want them to bring it either next generation hardware, say they're going to bring it next generation hardware, or there's so many games that are getting pushed back because of next generation hardware.
Here's the thought, Paul. It's the point that actually the hardware itself for games consoles at 360 and PS3 is actually pretty good. It was too far ahead of where the market was at the time that it first came out, and gamers are still not really working them particularly hard. And actually, it's the mobile gaming market that's the issue for where the big bucks really are. So things like the Vita, iPhone 4, 5, etc., are the ones where they're putting their resources into planning and development, and they're not putting it into PS3 because, first thing is, the game developers aren't stretching the platform, and second thing is, that's not where the bucks are anyway.
See, I actually think that the game developers are stretching the platform. I think that they've gotten a lot out of it. I'm not sure how much else they can do. I mean, we're already starting to hear of games that are getting pushed back to next-generation hardware.
Really?
Yeah. I can't remember. It was a couple of episodes ago. Chiz mentioned it in the Gamer Show. I can't remember what game it was, but it was one that I was quite looking forward to, and they've actually announced that they're going to leave it to next-generation hardware. I wish I could remember what one it was.
You don't think they're going to have a new Xbox next year? Because I thought they recently did have some kind of a... I don't know. There was some rumor that kicked up like a couple months ago that there was going to be something by next year. It kind of seems to me like, Paul, to support what you were saying, I think the more reviews I see lately are saying that the hardware is showing its age. I think if you look at one of the games that have a 60 hertz frame rate, like Modern Warfare, the textures are very low resolution. If you look at a high resolution game, the frame rate is very low. I think it had a big lead. Or it kept its pace with PC games for a long time in its life, and now it's showing its age. I'll let you answer the question. What did you think about Xbox next year?
I don't know. I've got a funny feeling it's going to be later than that. If it is next year, it's going to be like this time next year.
Really? That's an ocean.
Hmm?
That is an ocean of time.
Yeah, I know. The truth will be an E3 next year. And maybe we'll get something E3 next year, but I wouldn't be putting money on it at this stage. I don't think there's been enough evidence to back that up. All we've really had is there was a leaked document about 6 months ago or something like that from Xbox. But it was all over the joint with stuff that we would have seen evidence of by now if it was anywhere near it. There was the whole kind of projection throughout a room. There was a patent lodged for that, where you actually, your surroundings were projected in the wall around you in your living room as you were playing with the Kinect, double Kinect sensors, all sorts of stuff like that. I just don't buy it. That said, E3, I think it was E3 or somewhere around E3, there was the Final Fantasy next generation hardware demo, which was actually using a PC that was supposedly using the kind of technology that's in next generation hardware, PlayStation and Xbox. And it was quite impressive, but there's no way you could do that just now. There was just beautiful, beautiful graphics.
I just love the fantasy of games developers that they think they can put a projector into it, a Pico projector in the side of your Xbox. It sits in the middle of the room and it projects your surroundings onto your four walls around you so you can have an immersive gaming experience. Dude, you'd shoot a running machine. Because there's one behind you. And I plugged that radiator. It jumped out in the middle of nowhere and I shut it. There's just... People don't have that kind of sparsity. I mean, that game developers maybe have a room entirely devoted to gaming and nothing else. And the rest of us live in a modern world whereby I haven't got a frigging bare wall. You know, in the lounge, the wife's got a feature wallpaper that's got a textured wall surface on it that wouldn't reflect a beam from the sun. Let alone, I find it amazing. I want an immersive gaming experience. Put some goggles on.
They're going to make the holodeck. They want it to be, instead of just sitting in front of the big screen TV, they're going to have gamers that have just, everyone in their home just has a whole room that is just a white room with four walls, and you turn on the Xbox, and whoa!
Now,
the whole room just lights up.
Now, I just want to point out that Eric Lanigan has got a black wall with yellow highlighted lines on it behind him. There you go. So you can tell he's not married, can't you?
I know. I was gonna say
because Paul,
this is. I'm actually in a holodeck right as we speak. This all changes, and then it becomes a whole other world.
In more ways than one, mate.
What they need to do, they need to put, when you're playing Modern Warfare 3, they need to give you like a taser in your controller. So when you're actually fighting against someone, you know, when you do those battles over the net.
So my daughter walks in the room, and I tase her.
No, it's better. It's better than that. It tasers you. So when you're playing with someone over the net, when they shoot you, you actually get tasered.
Yeah, there's
You know, you can get a vest that does the same kind of thing, but it's non-lethal.
Yeah. Have you ever read the book Ready Player One?
No.
Oh, no, it's a really good book. I just recently finished it. And it's set 30 years in the future. I read it as an audiobook. Will Wheaton reads it. It's very good. Anyway, that is all about that kind of virtual reality. And they wear haptic suits so that you can actually feel like bullets hitting you and kind of weight on your shoulders and things like that. And you, the idea is that you stand on this almost like a ball that no matter what direction you run or you walk in or anything like that, you you actually can move about in the game. And it's sort of a World of Warcraft come a Second Life type thing where you can actually go to and get an education. And it's a really good book. I highly recommend anybody read it. They use all that kind of stuff as well. It's haptic suits and visors and all this kind of stuff, so it's not projecting on the wall.
Now, Alex and Paul, back me up here. Your wife is never going to allow wallpaper that looks like that, is she?
It's not wallpaper, it's acoustic foam.
I know it is, but she's never going to allow it, mate.
I would be allowed in my shed, but that's about it.
That's about it, exactly. See, that's my
it's
point.
It's just this.
So how much is this new PS3?
There's no price, mate. All they've done is spray it white. It's still the slim PS3. There's nothing else to it. They've just not. They've given you the 250 gig or the 500 gig hard drive option, and that's it.
You remember in the 90s, in the early 90s, when you first started to hear about virtual reality, it was all going to be virtual reality, where you have the goggles, and they show the demonstrations of, like, you put on these immersive goggles, and then you had the hands, and then you were, like, floating around in a virtual room that moved at, like, 4 frames per second.
Yeah.
And you'd, like, interact with a triangle and interact with a rectangle. And then you'd, like, chase a square around the room. And that was supposed to be the game.
Some of us have trouble with reality. We don't need any virtual. Mm-hmm. Has anyone seen this thing that I pulled up and stuck in the chat room, which was the comparative, it's called inflation-adjusted cost of gaming consoles?
And when did you put it in? About 2 hours ago, because I can't see any links.
It's a top thing in the, whatever you call it, in the dock. It's just really interesting to see the prices if you look inflation adjusted of what consoles cost.
Are you talking about in the chat room or in the Google Doc?
In the Google Doc.
Right.
I see it. It's the very top.
Yeah. It's just unbelievable how, you know, we just sort of think, oh, that's expensive. And you look at, I mean, the one that really blew me away, and it's not by no means the most expensive, was the Intellivision. And I remember at the time, you either had Atari or Intellivision, and the rich people had Intel. But that's the equivalent of, it's very fuzzy, I think it says $948.
These are adjusted costs.
Yeah, adjusted costs. I mean, the bottom one here, which is the Wii U, which is about to be released, is $300. Mm-hmm. And so you're talking Intel. There's got something called a Neo Geo, which is $1,138.
I remember that being extremely expensive at the time.
And the 3DO as well, and they were both useless.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm trying to work out. The cheapest is the GameCube at $258.
Yeah, but, so you look at the ones that are the big hits. Atari 7800, $293. The Genesis, $352. SNES, $336. Jaguar, $398. PlayStation 450, a bit higher, but the Nintendo 290. If they hit the $300 mark, they're big successes.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, look at where the best deals were. I mean, Sega Genesis cost nothing. Super NES cost nothing. N64, nothing. Dreamcast, nothing. I mean, clearly, the more expensive the game console, the more you should stay away.
Mm. They didn't. Intel was. I mean, it was ahead of its time, but it was so expensive. It was ridiculous.
The only thing I can remember about the 3DO was a logo, and that was it.
Even the PlayStation 3 didn't really take off till they dropped it down to, it was just, was it $399? Yeah, something like that. And it didn't do anything.
Where's the Pippin? I demand a Pippin.
One on eBay. I think the one that was made is still on eBay.
Power to the Pippin. You know, there is a Pippin at the Computer History Museum. The museum that's by Google's headquarters. I went there and there is a, I think it's in my video that I put on YouTube a couple years ago. There's a gold-plated or gold-spray-painted Apple Bandai Pippin of the... I didn't even know if they were ever sold, but they have one on display.
Bandai?
I didn't think they were sold in the Bandai. UK.
I've never heard of that before this evening.
It ran macOS 7 or something.
Mm. Jeez. Right.
Yeah. I don't think Rosetta they sold them mode. In the UK. I think it was just a states-only thing.
Rosetta, yeah.
Now, before we move away from games, what do we think about the Wii U? I think this is going to be... I'm going to go out on a limb and say this is going to be Apple's Dreamcast, Nintendo's Dreamcast. I think that this is going to be... I think they've got a strong portfolio of first-party titles, but they ran that into the ground on the Wii U. I mean, you can only come out with so many Donkey Kong, Zelda, Mario games before everyone gets sick of that.
And the funny thing is, none of them are coming out on release as well.
Yeah,
so and I mean, they're not even really, the strong titles.
They announced their upcoming titles, and the Wii U, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Wii U, I believe, is just barely on par with the graphics performance of the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3. So it's not like you're going
to... Yeah, basically.
Well, yeah, but to be fair, Eric, the Wii did prove that it was nothing to do with the graphics capability, it was to do with the gameplay. But I've got to say, I agree entirely with the point that you can't keep rehashing Zelda and Mario and expect it to sell new consoles.
Who's Star Fox 12, Mario Kart 36? Let's buy our new consoles fast. Re-releases of NES titles in 3D. Oh my God. I think they're going to be... So like I said, they've got so much intellectual property in these games and franchises, but they don't have compelling hardware. They've got the bottom of the barrel hardware that seems ever more to be marketed at very young kids who don't appreciate the lack of graphics and who aren't looking for those super complicated immersive games that you see on the big consoles. And I think they're positioning themselves more and more to be like baby's first console, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And then when you grow up, you graduate to the higher end consoles. You become a more advanced gamer with more advanced graphics and a more expensive system. And I don't think they're going to sustain that. I think Apple is going to eat them for lunch as they have been. You see, the new iPhone can be, I think the old one did too, but I never tried it. But you can, they showed in the keynote the other day that you can, with an Apple TV, you can use your iPhone as a motion controller to control a car or any kind of racing game or any game at all on your TV as you beam it and watch it on your TV in higher resolution than this Wii U could probably even pump out. So I think Apple and others, the smartphone market, the tablet market, have totally come in and swept up the motion-controlled, gyroscope-based touchscreen gaming. And I think this new big, giant touchscreen controller that is only a Nintendo controller and you can't do anything else like a tablet can, not a Retina display, not upgradable, all that with better graphics over time, all that stuff, I think the Wii U is going to be a disaster. I think it's going to be the last hardware we see from Nintendo, unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's still going to sell. I think they will manage to get some sales out of it, purely for people just wanting a Wii, because there are still people out there that don't have Wiis. What you're right is, it's for the kiddie market or the family market to a degree that maybe the parents aren't haven't been gamers or something like that. There's also the market that just want it for a fitness machine. I know there's a lot of that out there. But I think the concept's there. I'm quite interested to see it. I have to admit, I've pre-ordered it, so I'm quite looking forward to it coming just to have a bit of a play with it. But I think the concept's there, that idea of having that slate that kind of gives you that extra controller will be interesting. I don't, and we've talked about this at length at the Gamer Show, I don't like the idea of playing immersive games. Like, I could never, ever play like a Call of Duty projected onto my Apple TV with an iPad, because I like to feel the buttons, because you're not paying attention to where your hands are, you're paying attention to where your guy is on the screen, and that kind of touch control and things like that works a lot better. You've actually got buttons to move your fingers over. But no, I agree. I think it's just for the kiddie market and maybe the fitness market or something like that. But you know what? Give it a punt, see what happens.
Well, yeah. And grown-ups aren't going to be burned a second time. I mean, you know that a lot of adults went out and bought Wii's to play Wii Sports, or like you said, Wii Fit, and that was it. And they're not going to buy another $400 console to play Wii Sports 3 or Super Mario Brothers U, which sounds like it's a university, but it's not. Yeah. And I'm not paying $400 for one Mario game.
Yeah, I'm very much in that category. I've got a Wii, but you know, I'm certainly not going to go out and buy anything else.
But therein lies the point, you see. You've got to capture your market by getting them to project in their own minds what they intend to do with the device. And that was what Wii did.
Yes.
Wii was something that was completely groundbreaking. You had the wand, you had the playability, the fact that the whole family could be together. They capitalized on all of that process, and they sold a shed load of units. Where is the thing that makes people look at Wii U and go, got to have it? Nothing.
Yeah. Well,
there isn't anything. No, if I went and saw my mother, sorry, Paul, if I went and spoke to my mother 6 months after the Wii was released and said, have you heard about Wii? She'd have gone, yes, I have. If I went and spoke to her now about Wii U, she'd go, is that an add-on? She'd think it was something she bought to go with the Wii. It was something that added onto the existing console. She wouldn't put it as being something completely different. There is nothing that grabs the attention or the imagination of the consumers. And that's all the products are about. you've got to get someone to go, wow, and no, yeah. There is no way.
We actually bought one in the shop purely on the strength of actually playing with it. We didn't go in to buy one. We actually played it. Obviously, we'd heard about it as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just, we just thought it was such a laugh. We thought, okay, we've got to have one.
And the Wii was such a, it fulfilled a niche when it first came along. It was the first motion controlled console like that. So it was an incredible novelty. And it was the cheap. Oh, was Sarah talking that whole time? I couldn't hear.
No. She was agreeing with you.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks. and it filled an important niche at just the right time. When it came out, it was, I think, half the price of the Xbox and PS3. And that was a time when comparatively few people had HD TVs, so they didn't need that graphics power. It was just being letterboxed anyway. So it made a lot of sense to buy a Wii in like 2006, 2007. You know, last year before that, makes no sense.
I think there's another element to this, though, that we're not kind of touched on, and that's, yeah, okay, it's £300 or $300. So I'm assuming, well, I think it's £299. Sterling, but it's a handheld console as well as a plug into your tele console. So think about it from the point of view of maybe a family that isn't big into gaming, but they want to buy a device for the house, and the kid wants a tablet or some kind of Nintendo DS or something like that, or PS Vita. This kind of fulfills both of those requirements. For £300, you've got a device that will both be the kid's controller or movie player in the car, but then also they can come into the house and it is actually the games console.
But
as well
then they're not selling on that to the parents, the people with the money. That's exactly the point. That is an extremely valuable point. I've got Ellis comes in from school at night. He does his homework and then he gets an hour of games and he sits and plays an hour on his PS3 or on the Xbox or on the computer, and he hogs the TV at the process of doing it. And I would love him to come in and sit down with a Wii U and play it. But they're not selling it based on that. They're selling it on being the family games console. They're trying to troll out all the same crap that went along with the Wii, and it ain't the Wii. Go on, finish off.
Who?
Both of you. Just have your one point.
Okay, me first. Unlike, you know,
yeah, typical Wii, American, jump the frigging queue. Go on.
The Wii had they screwed it up by having, you know, the Wii Motion Plus, and now you need a nunchuck, and now you need this, and now you need that. But originally, it was everyone has a remote control style controller. Everyone's got the same controller, and you're doing stuff with it. You're waving it around. You're jumping around. You're playing. Everyone's having fun.
That's Nintendo's new payoff line. Buy a Nintendo. Do stuff with it.
Do stuff. Have fun, Nintendo.
It works than what they've currently got.
Well, I think for that reason, this controller, this separate controller that you only have one per console, is going to be a disaster for families and for kids. I mean, when I was a kid, we used to have horrible fights over who got to be first player Mario, which didn't even make any difference in the gameplay at all. How are kids going to fight when you only have one big paddle controller with a separate screen and separate gameplay, different from all the rest of the controllers? I what kind of fights are going to break out over that?
Absolutely. And Paul, your final point?
You can't even buy extra ones yet. Well, just to follow up, you can't even buy extra ones of those video panels, the tablet panels for the Wii U on release anyway. But separately of that, I was just going to say that Alex in the chat room has said that he needs his chiz fix. I think he would have killed this conversation off a while ago, so we should move on.
That's all right. We're done. I mean, we've been an hour already. That'd be fine. Not a problem. We're sorted.
I've got an hour. I show an hour 7. We always go the longest on those lightest news days.
It's true. No, it's good conversations. This podcast and all of the others on the network would not be possible without UK2. Paul's Chuckle Corner is getting enormous amounts of traffic at the moment, it would seem. Him dressed and what's the exact website again? Paul'sChuckleCorner.com.
Paul Wheatley's ChuckleCorner.com.
There we go. Yes. If you
let's advertise it more.
If you haven't been there already and you would like to see Paul Wheatley dressed in something that's wholly inappropriate, then that's what you need to do. And that website was bought as a demonstration on the Gamer Show, on the iOS show, by Paul. Unfortunately, when you make up URLs like that and you don't buy them, then someone else goes along and buys them. And Rod T did. He went and bought Paul Wheatley's Chuckle Corner. And Paul is dressed in something that's rather fetching, let it be said. And there's a music playing in the background, which I'm going to just... Chunky Town. There we go. So there you go. Yeah. That was bought using UK2.net. They're wonderful. I've given up trying to think of web pages to buy live on air during his demonstrations because I'm not going to actually buy them. And and someone else will, and they'll put me on it. So there you go. I'm not going to have a chuckle corner. But if you want anything, then you do need to go. Yeah, right. Ewanrankinschucklecorner.com. I'll look forward to that one next week. Paul, it looks like someone else in your village has logged on, so that's why you're all chunky and cracked up. You've gone down to 2 megabits a second. If you want anything for the web, absolutely brilliant, fantastic bunch of people, technically knowledgeable like you wouldn't believe. Guy named Steve sent me a DM today on Twitter and said, I want to buy a VPN, but, you know, I want to really make... Sorry, VPS. I want to make sure I'm getting exactly the right thing. Who can I speak to technically? Talk to the salespeople. They're fine. And he's rung them up and he's talked to them and they've given him all the answers that he wants from a technical viewpoint. And he's bought the VPS. And he used the offer code. And he got the reduction. See? That's all you've got to do. It's dead simple. Go to our webpage, BritishTechNetwork.com. Click on their link. It opens in a separate browser. Then go back to ours and click on sponsors and it'll give you all the offer codes. You can use every single one of those offer codes in the basket and take your basket down to hardly anything. 20% off domains, free DNS management for British Tech listeners. You get £50 off your first VPS bill for the month. Brilliant. Really, really good. UK2 have been supporting us for 3 years. They're definitely supporting us for another two. They've already signed up for another two because you guys are buying shed loads of UK2 service. Please, please, please keep supporting them because they support us and we'd be off there if we didn't have them picking up the bandwidth charges because they are stupid big. Yep. Thank you.
When you've bought your domains, continue to use the link to actually log into your account.
Absolutely. You can log in using the link on our page as well, which just proves that you're a returning customer. So thank you very much. And also as well, if you hear about anything, even like the cool pics and stuff like that, just type in the name of the place that we send you and then put / British Tech Network and they'll get a 404 report that says that they've got shed loads of people typing in. Let's see. There you go. Still get the actors. UK2. Cheers, mate. Right. And also Pusher.com. Paul, mention Pusher.
Pusher
on the web show, aren't they? But please go and try Pusher.
Yes. You kind of caught me under. There was a bit of a hospital pass there, Ewan. Thanks.
Sorry, man. No. But Pusher have been with us now for 3 months, haven't they? 4 months.
Probably about that. Actually, they're you know, with us for a wee while. They do an awesome service that basically creates real time web notifications and things like that for websites. So they create some awesome stuff. So, like, for example, if you were building like a website for a sports team or something like that, like a local rugby team, and you wanted to have live updating scores during the game on a Saturday afternoon, you could actually use Pusher for to create that kind of thing, and it would send notifications out to the phones. It would send notifications to the website and keep the scores and everything like that live updated. It's a really cool service.
I'm going to talk about that because I'm doing the rugby club's website at the minute. So perfect.
They do all sorts of cool stuff like that. They do other things. A really good analytics package called Gauge. That they do, GAUG.ES, I think it is. Very cool. And you get 3 months free with them if you use... I wasn't really expecting this, so I haven't prepared.
It's all right.
The sponsors, there's that. webshow_bootstrap, there you go. That's the code word. There you go.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Chat room's already gone mad. Unfortunately, Paul Wheatley's Chuckle Corner is now... Paulum's homepage for when he opens his browser. He loves Funky Town. And DT has already gone and purchased I'm not going to have a chucklecorner.com. Yes. Pete has now challenged him back saying I'm not going to have a chucklecorner.com. Want a bet? ? So there we go. Webshow _bootstrap. That was the thing.
Thank you, Alex. Yes.
Excellent. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Right, cool things. Alex, we kind of, you were co-opted in at the last minute for tonight, so do you want me to come back to you, or have you got something?
No, it's just very quick, and it's just something that happened today, which it worked, so it was worth doing. Somebody actually phoned me, texted me, emailed me in a real panic because someone had sent them an AutoCAD file. It was an architect, actually, and it was to do with their new extension, and they wanted an approval, and they got already panicky, and they were actually on their iPad, and they've got a Mac, and I just said, why not get AutoCAD WS, which is a free bit of software that you can get from the App Store. There's an iOS version as well, and it's just a simple AutoCAD viewer. So I mean, you can do slightly more with it than Vue, but from my understanding, you're best off just using it as a viewer. But if you do run into any issues and you want a free AutoCAD viewer that does works on the Mac and all your iOS devices, try AutoCAD WS. It's free in the app stores.
Yes, and AutoCAD are built by Autodesk. And Autodesk, if you do Autodesk in the iTunes store, there is a shed load of software from them that is Booksy. So, and it's good quality stuff. There's Sketch application. There's also
there's quite a few.
There's one that you can create 3D models and rotate them in it as well.
Yeah,
if you canny and put them against a green screen, you can capture them for video. Brilliant, really, really good. Autodesk are fab at the moment. There are a bunch of thieving gits when it comes to AutoCAD.
You pay for the full version.
The full version is worse than Photoshop, and Photoshop will open it. So.
Yeah, I mean, Adobe, you've got something to learn from them, I tell you.
Absolutely.
But anyway, this is free, so give it a go if you need it.
Thank you. Good pick, sir. Mr. Wheatley.
Well, contrary to what we said earlier about Flash being dead, Gordon's alive, and only gamers are going to get that reference because my pick is Black Mesa. Which is the that's really funny in my head. I'm sorry, but for everybody else, the main character in Black Mesa, or what was Half-Life 1, was a guy called Gordon Freeman. And basically, what they've done is they've taken the source engine for Half-Life 2 and remade Half-Life 1, and it's called Black Mesa, and it's a free download, and it's pretty awesome so far. Hang on, I'll see if I can find the link. Is release.blackmesasource.com, and you go over there and download it. It's a huge file. It's about 3.5 gig. It took me about 7 hours to download it, but that's because I live in the moon. So
wow, that hurts.
Yeah.
Oh man, alive.
But it's pretty damn cool. It's been years since I've actually played Half-Life 1, but I think they've pretty much kept spot on the original story. So very cool.
Excellent. Good pick, sir. Thank you very much. Ms. Gray, what do you have for us?
Those of you that have been watching British Tech Network show, or as it was then, Bagel Tech, may remember me talking about these little mini speakers that you use for your MP3 player. I'm not going to name particular MP3 players because that would be unfair. Well, they're called the X Mini speakers, and they've actually brought out the second generation of them now, and they're actually even better. So much so, I bought a load here, and you probably see them. You might even be able to hear a certain person's voice on that, actually, from a show from the past. But they don't need power. They're great. You just charge them through a little mini USB slot and plug them into your MP3, and it's instant amplified sound. So you don't need headphones. You can use them for anything that will take a 3.5 jack. About 17 quid. So they're not free, bad at all. But they are good. I bought two for over here because we're using them over here. So I've got two based in England, two over here. They're awesome.
You just be rolling in money, don't you, girl?
Well, I feel like I'm having to buy two of everything these days.
Exactly.
Is it raining a lot there,
though? Sack says, can you hold it up, Sarah?
Oh, sorry, I thought I had done. Obviously, it wasn't on the... There you go.
Hold it above your head. There we go.
Okay.
Oh, very good. Little tiny speaker, very good.
Plugged into my little MP3 player, which is not an iPad.
Now,
an iPod, as you might imagine.
But Eric, you did say that they're not to be confused with your USB speakers.
Shut up. I'm not a geek.
What was that?
That was the echo of me.
Yeah. That was my voice talking about C sharp from a previous episode.
I was just going to say, I have this little thing from JLab called the JLab B-Flex, and I was just going to point it out as another alternative or another type of thing. I actually don't recommend it because it's not that good a sound quality, but if you have like a little laptop that has no output or very low output, you just need like basically attach a megaphone to it. You can get this little mono speaker for, I don't know, it's like $20. And it does what it's supposed to do, but the sound quality is not that great, but just as another option. This is USB. I know yours is the traditional headphone jack style.
Mm. Excellent. Your pass of the week. What is your pick, sir?
My pick is that I noticed that if I rotate on my chair like this, I look like a stereoscopic 3D GIF.
Okay.
No, I have a pick. My pick is LastPass. I'll do it as a fast one. I haven't used 1Password, but I have been looking into more of password security. Ars Technica had an article about how passwords have never been less secure, never been easier to crack. Basically, if you're using the same password in more than one place, you're extremely vulnerable to all kinds of identity theft and all kinds of nightmarish scenarios. If you follow that guy, the Wired magazine guy who had his phone and his laptop remote wiped because he used the same password on Amazon and Apple and iTunes and everything and iCloud, you've got to have separate passwords. And I had never used LastPass before. I finally did. It took a couple hours because you got to think of some new passwords. You got to think of some you'll memorize and you won't have to write down. And then you've got to go through all your other accounts and make new passwords. You got to generate. Basically, the safe way to do it is you come up with 1Password that you always remember, that's nice and secure. Come up with a few of those and rotate them around and change those. And that's your LastPass password. Then once you get inside of LastPass, you use a specially generated super secure password that you don't have a prayer of memorizing, you know, like 26 characters full of random digits and random exclamation points and asterisks and everything. You let it generate that using its generation tool, and then you save it. So then when you log into any site, you put in your LastPass password and you go right in. And what I was worried about was what do you do if you're on a different computer, if you're not at home, or if you're on a phone or something? If you get it for iPhone, you can even, you can copy and paste your passwords there. So it's actually a lot easier than I thought it would be on the iPhone to use a LastPass password with something like that. You know, to plug it into like an Amazon app or a Facebook app, there's copying and pasting that you have to do, but it's worth it once you get that done, because then you never have to worry about a password being compromised ever again. Imagine if a company sends you your password in plain text over email, that used to be a vulnerability, but not if you use the password only one place and never again anywhere else. You can really contain any identity breaches that Sony PlayStation Network or any of these guys who suddenly lose our data. You'll be safe. You'll protect yourself from that. So that's my pick, LastPass.
Excellent.
Eric, how do you find that against 1Password? Sorry. Have you tried it in both of them?
No, I did not try 1Password. I'd heard such good things about LastPass, and I think that I may have thought that 1Password was Mac only. I think it started out that way. Do you use it?
Right, okay. I use 1Password, but the biggest problem I have is that I can't install it on the machine I use at work. And so basically I've had to kind of go back to the old traditional way of just having a few passwords that I have to remember on most of my major accounts.
Well, like I said, I haven't used 1Pass 1Password, but I think LastPass may do what you need it to do, actually, because you can have it as a browser plugin. It's not an application. There's no .app or .exe to install it on any platform. It's all browser plugin based.
Right, okay.
And like I said, it's on the iPhone. It's on Android. It's also web-based. So you can log into the website. Now, here's a cool thing. You can, ahead of time, before you leave your house, just do it once and write down a little slip of paper, use some one-time passwords that it generates that only allow one login ever. So you put that in your wallet or something, and the next time you're out somewhere and you've got to get to your email or something from a foreign computer, you use that password to get the LastPass, you copy your real password, and then you never again. And so if anyone was, even if you're on a computer that's so public that you may think there's a keylogger installed on it, you can use the on-screen keypad to key in by hand a virtual on-screen keyboard, even on the desktop computers. So you're completely immune from any kind of a keylogger or anything if you're like in a public venue. So there's a lot of cool features about LastPass.
That's a good idea.
I'll have to look at that. Thank you.
Excellent.
Oh, actually, no, sorry. It's not free. I recommend you get the upgrade, but it's only $12 a year, so $1 a month.
That's cool. Tone's just bought loweringthetone.net. Upset that he can't get that comment. You get very good, very good. And Sack says he used memorized algorithms to determine his own passwords. Very good.
Oh, that's just short.
I get that. Right, my pick, and I haven't played it yet because it's not here yet, is the F1 2012 game. It is available. It's been dispatched from Amazon. It will be here tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
And guess what I'm doing before we play? Max Show. Oh man, I'm going to be playing. And the beauty of it is, of course, that you get the new Circuit of the Americas course. It's an anti-clockwise circuit as opposed to a clockwise one. And it's supposed to be an extremely demanding circuit. And it's Austin. And you get to drive around it before the pros do.
Yeah, it's in November, isn't it?
On 2012, yeah. It's the penultimate Grand Prix before Lagos in Brazil, Interlagos in Brazil. We're at round 14 this weekend for Singapore, but you get to have a play with it. And I love the F1 game because before we do the F1 podcasts, I go and I drive round the circuits and I get a feel for what they're like. And then I can comment, I think, a little bit better on them. And I love things like Belgium and Monza particularly. Italy's fantastic. And I used to love Turkey as well before they dropped it from the circuit. I thought that was great. But I'm going to have a play this weekend at the United States. And I'm sure when we do the F1 show this weekend, I'll be talking about Austin rather than talking about Singapore. But there you go, because I'm not that happy with Singapore. I don't think it's a good circuit. But that's it, F1. It's $29.99 from Amazon, and it'll be here tomorrow, and I love it to bits, and I haven't even played it yet.
You should do a British Tech Network F1 game like you used to do with the Call of Duty ones. I think it was Steve used to do the Call of Duty ones.
Oh, aye.
Yeah, because Chiz and Russell that we have on the Gamer Show now and again, they are massive F1 players. They regularly play like the full length.
We should do it, instead of doing it through British Tech, we should do it through the Gamer Show particularly.
Mm.
Yeah,
you don't want to. I'm crap at driving games, but Chiz is very good. He kind of holds the show up from a gamer level.
Paul in the chat room wants to know if I've opened Modern Warfare 3 yet. I don't actually even know where it is anymore, but I can guarantee it's still in the plastic. 43 quid, well spent. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Fox? Where are you, sir?
Oh, falling asleep. Very sorry.
Thanks, mate.
No, not you.
I know Eric's pick was good, but...
just lack of sleep. You can get me on Alex G. Fox on Twitter.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Wheatley, where will you be?
You can get me on Twitter. I'm Paul Wheatley, Paul Whetley, and on the Gamer Show, iOS Show, and Web Show on this network.
Excellent. Ms. Sarah Gray, where are you, dear?
You can get me at the Twitters on Sarah Jane UK, sometimes on this show, on the F1 show, and... every so often on the web show as well.
Excellent. And apparently, Eric, you are available as Eric Lanagif, and that's E-R-I-K-L-A-N-I-G-I-F, at ericlanagif.com.
No, did someone pay money for that?
Oh, I really hope that someone's bought that and they just do you flicking backwards and forwards on the homepage. Someone, for God's sake, go to UK2 and buy ericlanagif.com.
And if you don't do that, you can at least go to ericlanagan.com, E-R-I-K-L-A-N-I-G-A-N, and Eric Lanagan on Twitter.
Yeah, but he's no fun compared to the other one.
Eric Lanagif, I don't get it.
Because he was a GIF a minute ago, Eric Lanagan.
And the stereoscopic GIFs that just flicker like this, and then look, it creates the illusion of 3D.
Okay, all right, I get it now.
Right, that's it, we're done. I'm Ewan Rankin, you can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. And I'll be on TNT again in a couple of weeks. I'm on the 10th, Thursday the 10th. No, 11th. Thursday the 11th of October, I'll be back on TNT with Tom Merritt. And Tom Merritt will be back on here in a couple of weeks as well, so that'd be good. I'm off to study my ring and see what shape it is and see if I can reduce weight by changing the shape of my ring. See you soon.